Revelations chapter 8, verse 1, and when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour, and I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer, and there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. And the angel took the censer, and filled it with fire of the altar, and cast it into the earth, and there were voices, and thunderings, and lightnings, and an earthquake. And the seven angels which had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. When you open the seventh seal, we saw that you have that mixing up once again of the prayers of the saints, and the prayers of the saints are those martyrs that have died down through the ages and asked for vengeance, and you see all that stuff mixed together, hey Gracie, and sent out. Okay, and we've looked at that, and the result of mixing that up with the fire of the altar and casting it down to the earth is that there's voices and thunderings and lightnings and another earthquake. And then the seven angels prepare to sound. So the seven angels and the sounding of the seven angels come out of the seventh seal. All of this stuff is sequential. So you've gone through the six seals, you open the seventh seal, and you see the seven trumpets start to sound. When you get to the end of the seven trumpets, the last three trumpets are the three woes. And then the last woe or the last trumpet there brings the seven vials. So all of this stuff is sequential and happens one after another. And here you see that judgment that's mixed up with the prayers of the saints. And what's happening is God's taking vengeance on the earth for what they've done to his own. And then you see the seven trumpets prepare to sound. And that's where we've left off. Let's look at verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of trees was burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up. So here you see anything left in the earth that wasn't destroyed from the angels who restrained the wind before, now all of that is burned up. So all green grass, there is no more green grass, okay? That's kind of hard to imagine, but all green grass is gone, and a third of all the trees on the earth are wiped out. Now, I don't know if you ever thought about that, but what produces the oxygen that's on the earth? It's the plant life, isn't it? So you're getting a reduction in the amount of oxygen in the atmosphere, and you know, all kinds of things that follow that. You know, an increase in the greenhouse effect, and all this stuff can take place with that one angel sounding. But you have that hail and fire mingled with blood, and that's a lot of these judgments. Yeah, just like California. A lot of these judgments are judgments that are there all along. Okay, look back at the book of Exodus. Look at Exodus chapter 9 when you see Israel coming out of Egypt. And God poured out his judgment on the gods of Egypt. Exodus chapter 9. This is very similar to what you see happened over here. Exodus 9, look down at verse 22. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch forth thine hand toward heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, upon man and upon beast, and upon every herb of the field, throughout the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched forth his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire ran along upon the ground. And the Lord rained hail upon the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire mingled with hail, very grievous, such as there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. Now watch what that hail and fire mingled with blood did. And the hail smote throughout all the land of Egypt all that was in the field, both man and beast, and the hail smote every herb of the field and brake every tree of the field. You see that? Only in the land of Goshen where the children of Israel were was there no hail. So God made a difference. So when you see over in Revelation chapter 8, when he pours out that fire and that hail that's mingled with fire is just like back there in Egypt, and it's walking through when it talks about all the green grass being burnt and a third of all the trees, that's what it's talking about, is that same kind of hail like you had back there in Exodus. And in very much Exodus, Israel coming out of the land of Egypt is very much like the second coming. It's typical of things that are taking place. And you remember, Moses is one of the two witnesses, and what is Moses doing? Moses is doing everything that he did back there in Egypt, again, over here in the book of Revelations. Very interesting passage. there's another passage that talks about hail, and I want you guys to see this because this is a fascinating passage. Look at the book of Job. Job has a lot of creation information in it, and Job talks about something about hail that a lot of people don't realize, but I want you to see it. Look at Job chapter 38. And, you know, we're not getting into depth in these things. We're just scratching the surface here, but I'm throwing out verses at you guys for your own personal study. And when we get to the book of Revelations on Tuesdays, as we're doing it, we're going to get very specific and in-depth, but I just want you to see these things as we're going through the book and just kind of getting familiar with it. Look at Job 38. Look down at verse. Well, Job 38 is a rebuke against Job. The Lord appears in the whirlwind. Remember, the whirlwind comes out of the north, and that's where God's presence and everything is. So God comes down personally and speaks to Job here. His glory is here and everything, and basically just shuts Job's mouth. So God goes through a series of rebukes. You know, you think you're such a smart guy. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? And how did I fasten the foundation of the earth? And he talks about all those things. Look at verse 22. Hast thou entered into the treasures of the snow, or hast thou seen the treasures of the hail, which I have reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war? Isn't that interesting? God says he's got a treasure chest that's part of creation, and in that treasure chest he has some hail that he's treasured up or reserved, and that hail that he's treasured up is for the day of battle and war, against the time of trouble or tribulation. Isn't that interesting? A fascinating passage. Job is a good book to study. Got a lot of creation information. But a part of that creation is that God has that treasure chest and he has that hail saved up to use in the day of battle. And he uses it over there in Egypt, and you see him use it over here in Revelations. Okay, go back to Revelations chapter 8, and we'll continue on here. That's the first angel out of the seventh seal there. So here, mixed up in that first angel, there's a lot of stuff that happens that you're not even aware of. When that hail and that fire and everything goes out, no doubt it's just like back there at the day of Egypt, and it's killing all the animals and the trees and, you know, all that stuff. You know, at least a third of the trees is gone, and all green grass. So when this thing happens, it's a worldwide thing that takes place, and all the green grass on the earth is gone. Okay, all the green herb. So, and a third of the trees is gone. So no doubt a great deal of the animal creation is gone. It really shakes up the world. Verse 8, Revelations 8:8. And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood. And the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. Now, it doesn't call this mountain a star, but the word behind it is the idea of an asteroid. So it's entirely possible, like, you know, people in the world, the scientific community is worried about the asteroid coming down and hitting the earth and that kind of stuff, that it actually does happen here in Revelations chapter 8. And the result of this great mountain that's burning with fire, which is what happens when something enters the atmosphere of the earth as it falls, it gets very hot and it hits the compression of the air and the temperature heats up and it fires, it burns on fire. So you have this mountain that comes down, it enters the atmosphere, it's on fire, and it lands into the sea. And the result of that mountain landing into the sea is that a third part of the sea becomes blood. Also, you see a third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. Obviously, if a third of the sea is blood, a third of the creatures that were in that sea would die. But then you also see a third part of the ships were destroyed. Now that, I don't know if you ever gave any thought to what's going on there in that, but that's entirely possible that a third part of the ships die as the result of a tsunami. Obviously, if something very great came down and hit the earth, that would cause quite a tsunami. Just think about Asia. Asia, what happened under the water is you had a section of plate there that popped up and dropped, and just the result of that popping up and dropping, and that's kind of a simplistic way to look at it, I know, but just the result of that popping up and dropping it was what wiped out over 283,000 people over in Asia. Well, think about what would happen if a great mountain burning with fire fell and hit. No, it would not be a bomb. Life is a box of M&Ms. You got to remember that what's taking place in the earth at this time is that there is no technology. When you look at the Book of Revelations, these guys are fighting on horseback with sword and bow and arrow and that kind of stuff. So when you're talking about the time period of the Revelation, you're talking about a time period where there is no technology. There's no jeeps, tanks, missiles, bombs, none of that stuff. These guys are fighting on horseback with bow and arrow and swords, and these judgments are coming directly from God. Okay, so this great mountain that comes with fire falls down and hits the sea, wipes out a third of the sea, turns it into blood, and a third part of the creatures. And then you see a third part of the ships also die. You're not getting the point. If there is no bomb, it can't be a bomb. It doesn't matter whether they understand a bomb or not. A third part of the ships being gone can happen from two things. Well, I know it because I've read the text, Box of M&Ms. And the text says that men are running around on horseback with bow and arrows and swords and not running around in jeeps and tanks and trucks and using missiles and things. Okay. The third part of the ships could have died in one of two ways. Either through a tsunami, which is probably the more likely, or also from the blood that's in the sea. I don't know how much you know about ships, and ships cannot carry all that much fresh water. Okay, they have tanks that they carry, but they have plants that remove the salt from the ocean water and add to the water that they have in their tanks so that they can get by. So when you're talking about a third part of the ships being burned up, some of that could be from the blood, which would contaminate the water so that they cannot make water anymore. And it would take quite a bit of time to get out of the area where a third part of the earth was blood. So it could be one of the two. I have a tendency to believe the tsunami, but that's the two ways looking at the passage that I could see that something like that would take place. Okay, Revelation 8, verse 10. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning, as it were, a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. This is a fascinating passage, too. You have this third angel that sounds and a star called wormwood. You can figure out what that is for yourself. The idea of wormwood is the idea of, you see it translated both wormwood, and then one time in Amos 6, verse 12, you see it translated as hemlock. And basically, when you get down to the root of the word, what it means is bitter cursing. So things are made bitter, basically, because of a curse, so to speak. And that's the idea of wormwood and hemlock. And what the star is, you can guess as well as me, whether it's an angel or some kind of an asteroid or star kind of thing that comes down. You know, you can figure that out because I have no idea. The result of the wormwood star falling, though, is not only is now a third of the sea gone, but now you also have a third of the rivers are gone and the water has become bitter. And I find some interesting things here, because there's a connection between cursing and bitterness and idolatry or adultery, spiritual adultery, which is idolatry. And for the nation of Israel, this is very significant. Look back to Numbers chapter 5. Hold your place there in Revelation. Let's come back to Numbers chapter 5. An interesting passage, which I'll throw at you here, and you can figure that one out for yourself. Numbers chapter 5, look at verse 11. Think about this passage in light of Revelations and what's going on with that wormwood star that falls and the waters being made bitter. Kind of an interesting thing. Verse 11, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, if any man's wife go aside and commit a trespass against him, and a man lie with her carnally, and it be hid from the eyes of her husband, and be kept close, and she be defiled, and there be no witness against her, neither she be taken with the manner, in other words, she doesn't get pregnant as a result of it, and the spirit of jealousy come upon him, and he be jealous of his wife, and she be defiled, or if the spirit of jealousy come upon him, and he be jealous of his wife, and she be not defiled. So what you have going on here is a woman who has either committed adultery or has not. And the spirit of jealousy comes upon the husbandman, and either it's true that she committed adultery or it's not. Now bear in mind, when you're dealing with God and Israel, Israel committing adultery is what? Idolatry, something that Israel has done over and over again. Now watch what this man can do to resolve the spirit of jealousy, to determine whether his wife really did have adultery or not. Verse 15, then shall the man bring his wife unto the priest, and he shall bring her offering for her, the tenth part of an ephah of barley meal. He shall pour an oil upon it, nor put frankincense thereon, for it is an offering of jealousy, an offering of memorial, bringing iniquity to remembrance. Just like over there in the tribulation period. And the priest shall bring her near and set her before the Lord. And the priest shall take holy water in an earthen vessel. And of the dust that is in the floor of the tabernacle, the priest shall take and put it into the water. And the priest shall set the woman before the Lord and uncover the woman's head and put the offering of memorial in her hands, which is the jealousy offering. And the priest shall have in his hand the bitter water that causeth the curse. Isn't that interesting? Just like he'll bring the wormwood. But if, verse 19, and the priest shall charge her by an oath and say unto the woman, if no man have lain with thee, and if thou hast not gone aside to uncleanness with another instead of thy husband, be thou free from this bitter water that causeth the curse. But if thou hast gone aside to another instead of thy husband, and if thou be defiled, and some man have lain with thee beside thine husband, then the priest shall charge the woman with an oath of cursing, and the priest shall say unto the woman, the Lord make thee a curse and an oath among thy people, when the Lord doth make thy thigh to rot and thy belly to swell. And this water that causeth the curse, the bitter water, shall go into thy bowels to make thy belly to swell and thy thigh to rot. And the woman shall say, amen, amen. And the priest shall write these curses in a book, and he shall blot them out with the bitter water, and he shall cause the woman to drink the bitter water that causeth the curse, and the woman that caused the water that causeth the curse shall enter into her and become bitter. And then he takes away the offering. So what happens is she's fed bitter water because there's a possibility that she's committed adultery, and then the bitter water will determine whether she really did commit adultery or not. And if she did not commit adultery, in other words, she wasn't in idolatry, then the bitter water will have no effect. And remember the 144,000 of them guys, they're sealed, so those things don't take effect on them, do they? But if she did commit adultery, or in other words, in idolatry like Israel, then the bitter water that causeth the curse, or the wormwood, would have the effect on her, wouldn't it? Just kind of interesting. I throw that passage out to you because it kind of ties right in there with Revelations. When you see the earth fed bitter water, and the problem with the earth is that she's been in adultery, and especially the nation of Israel. So here you see the bitter water that causes the curse, or the wormwood that comes down, that great star from heaven, and it takes a third part of the rivers. And the star is called wormwood. And verse 11, Revelations 8:11. Go back to Revelations. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. So you got a fourth of the earth that's already been wiped out. Then you see creation itself attacked with the curse, and here you have many men dying of the water. So you're getting a huge body count here already, and it's just the beginning. Now, verse 12. Revelations 8:12. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, 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 to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices, the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound. The fourth angel sounds, and the sun is smitten, and a third part of the moon, and a third part of the stars, don't give light anymore. and the day doesn't shine for a third part of it. The result of this judgment that takes place, this trumpeting angel, is that there's darkness. And I don't know if that brings a verse right to mind again, but go back to Exodus again in Egypt. Exodus chapter 10. You see the same thing takes place back with the nation of Israel. No, the day is still the same length of time. It's just that the sunlight doesn't shine for that third part of it. So you got a third part of the day that's gone and a third part of the night that's gone. It's just darkness. Exodus chapter 10, look down at verse 21. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, even darkness which may be felt. And Moses stretched forth his hand toward heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. They saw not one another, neither rose any from his place for 3 days, but all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. So here you have darkness put on the land of Egypt, just like over there in Revelations, and it's a darkness that can be felt. It's a darkness that's a trouble. Matter of fact, you know, look at Luke. Look at Luke chapter 23. Darkness is a part of God's judgment. Remember we were looking at recreation over there in Genesis chapter 1. And in Genesis 1:2 it said, darkness was upon the face of the deep. Well, darkness is a part of God's judgment. It's the result of God's judgment. So here you see a third part of the day is gone and a third part of the night. Look at Luke 23. Look down at verse 44. Here you have the Lord hanging on the cross. And he tells the thief there that he'll be with him in paradise today. Look at verse 43. And Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto thee, today shalt thou be with me in paradise. Now watch verse 44. And it was about the sixth hour, and there was a darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. Hey, Ortho. You see that? What's going on? God's judgment's going on. So you see, the darkness comes, and it would no doubt was a darkness that could be felt as that judgment's being poured out on the Lord. Darkness is a part of God's judgment, and you see it appear at the time of the cross, and interestingly enough, it's for 3 hours. Kind of an interesting time period there when you start talking about a third of the day. Okay. Let's go back to Revelation chapter 8, and we'll continue on. Revelation chapter 8, look at verse 13 again. You kind of get the idea in Revelation that the earth is going to be a mess, don't you? verse 13, and I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, 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 to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound. That woe, woe, woe there is the three angels that are remaining to sound. Angel 5, 6, and 7 that sound the trumpets are the first, second, and third woe. Excuse me. Look down at... let me find the verse here. In 9, verse 1 there, you have the fifth angel sound. And then you have a running... Look down at verse 12. Here we go. Look at Revelation 9, 12. I'm sorry. I sent you the wrong chapter. Verse 12 says, one woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter. Verse 13, and the sixth angel sounded. So you see the woes are taking place. And it's right here that the two witnesses are killed. If you look over at Revelation 11, it's verse 14 says, the second woe is past, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly. So it's after the second woe that you see the two witnesses are killed. So, Revelation 9:1, let's continue on. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. So it's a literal smoke. And it actually darkens the sun and the air. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. And unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. Now, I don't know if you thought about it. You have, Hal Lindsey and some other guys trying to make these locusts into helicopters and that kind of thing. But the Bible says that they are locusts, and they come straight out of the bottomless pit. Okay, so they're not helicopters. I don't know too many helicopters that can fly under the earth anyway. And especially not around a lot of fire and smoke. You've read that one, Late Great Planet Earth and all that stuff, yeah. I've read his books too. It's a shame. He's making a lot of money is what he's doing. Verse 3 again, and there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. So these are locusts that have a scorpion's power. That's an interesting statement. Verse 4, and it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. So these locusts are not going to go after any plant life. They're there for one purpose. And that purpose is to get men. It's going to be, these locusts are going after humans. Verse 5, and to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. So there are locusts that come up, and those locusts that come up, they can only get the bad guys. Okay, they can't get the good guys. They can't get the Lord's guys that are sealed in their foreheads. Okay, so they're not going to be able to touch the 144,000 and those guys. But they're going to get everybody else in the human race, and they're limited in their ability. Okay, they're not going to be able to kill the people. They're going to be kept alive, but they're going to be tormented. And the period of this first woe that happens to the earth is a 5-month period. Now watch at verse 6. And in those days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. Okay, remember before the horse went out that had death sitting on him, and peace was taken from the earth, and hell followed, and men were dying. A quarter of the earth was wiped out with all those 4 sore judgments. Here, you see death removed. Now, let me ask you a question. How do men seek death? You ever thought about that verse? What does it mean when a person seeks death? These people are going to try to commit suicide. The pain, that's right, the pain from these locusts, which have a scorpion's power and sting, is going to be so painful, and it's going to last for 5 months, that men are going to actually seek to die. They're going to try to commit suicide, but God is not going to allow that to happen. Okay, death is going to be pulled from the earth for a 5-month period. That's right, hell on earth. And that 5-month period, they're not going to be able to die. They're going to be tormented. It's good reason it's called the first woe. Because that's a woe, buddy, if you ever heard one, isn't it? So for 5 months, these guys are going to be stung like they're stung from scorpions. Now think about something. A scorpion can only sting you where? Scorpions are pretty easy to take care of, actually. Because a scorpion can only sting you in the foot. It walks on the ground. It can only sting you on the ground where you are. So if you're out in the desert, you can do things like shake out your boots to make sure that, because they like the heat and they come around the heat. And so you can shake out your boots and make sure there's no scorpions in it. And if you're wearing your good old cowboy boots, the sting's not going to go through the leather, that kind of stuff. It's pretty easy to take care of. And you can actually crunch them. So when you step on them, is what I'm talking about there. I've been out in the desert for a few years, so I know, you know, a little bit about scorpions and that kind of thing. But these stings, there you go, yeah, whoa. These stings are on locusts. And locusts can do what? They can fly, buddy. They're not just going to be on the ground, but they're going to fly. Matter of fact, there's a verse in the Bible. I'll throw this one at you. You can figure this one out for yourself. There's a verse in the Bible that talks about why every man's hand is why every man is standing with his hand on his loins, and their faces are turned to paleness and blackness. This first woe right here may very well be the reason why, because they're probably going to want to protect themselves so that they don't get stung somewhere that it would hurt even worse than what's going on, huh? Interesting. That verse is there if you want to find it out. I'll just throw that one out at you. But for 5 months, these guys are going to get stung by scorpions, and they're going to want to die, and they're not going to be able to. Okay? Now, I don't know if you know how a scorpion, a lot of people don't know how scorpions affect you, but here's some of the symptoms of being stung by a scorpion, and this is what men are going to feel for 5 years, and they're going to feel it bad because they're not going to be stung just once. The first thing you get is an immediate and intense burning pain at the sting site that lasts about 30 minutes. Now, that's from a normal scorpion, so no doubt that will be amplified since these are, you know, guys straight out of the bottomless pit down there. Along with the sting, as time goes by, you have things that happen like abdominal cramps as your body tries to fight the poison. You have an abnormal sensitivity. You get a burning sensation and pins and needles in the hands, feet, face, and scalp. So when the poison spreads over your body, it affects all of your body. You get an excessive sensitivity of the skin, so that even clothing and bedding bothers you. Anything touching your flesh is going to bother you. So guess what people are going to want to do? They're going to want to stay covered, but they're not going to be able to stand their clothes, are they? And guess where what's going on with the sun? Remember the verses before there? The wind has been withheld, so the sun is even hotter. And yeah, ain't that something? It's not going to be pleasant. It's going to be a woe. This is just the beginning. As it progresses, depending on the seriousness of the venom, you end up with a lack of muscle coordination so that you start walking like a stiff-legged or drunk walking, and you have involuntary movements and tremors and muscle weakness. You start feeling bad, really bad. Your heart rate goes through the roof. So you start beating at like 150 beats per minute. Your blood pressure goes through the roof. And you know how the blood pressure will make you feel. Then you start to get a difficulty in swallowing. But along with the difficulty in swallowing is an excessive salivation. So not only is it hard to swallow, but now you have to swallow because your mouth is salivating. Your body's trying to get rid of the poison. And your mouth is just salivating like crazy. And you also have trouble speaking. So speech is going to be hard at this time. You end up with excessive perspiration, again, because your body's trying to get rid of the poison. You end up with headaches, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. Can you imagine? Have you ever had a migraine? Any of you guys here? Or any of you ladies? Probably more likely you have. Guys are kind of lucky with migraines. Usually they go away by the age of 40. Ladies aren't so lucky. Usually they end up with them for a while. But can you imagine 5 months of headaches and nausea and vomiting and diarrhea? And then you're also going to have restlessness and anxiety and also respiratory distress. You're going to have trouble breathing. All of those things are the result of scorpion stings. And all of these things are going to last for 5 months. So it's not going to be a pretty thing. It's going to be so bad that men are going to actually try to commit suicide to end the pain, and God is not going to allow that to happen. Death is a personality in the Bible. And God is going to remove that person. That's right. Also, no more sleep. They're going to have droopy eyelids and want to sleep, but because of the poison, they're not going to be able to. So it's not going to be a pretty time. Okay. I guess we kind of impressed that one in Yeah, it's not going to be pretty. Now think about the worst you've ever felt and multiply that times 50 and then make it last for 5 months. Okay, let's look at verse 7, Revelations 9, 7. Oh my, look at the time. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle, and on their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold. And their faces were as the faces of men, and they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions, and they had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. And they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. These guys, when you look at them, I don't know if you have ever looked at a locust, but there's a similarity that men have noticed. No, the ones who are sealed by God are protected, Bible true. Israel that's not protected is going through this just like the Gentiles. No difference. Only those that have the seal of God on their foreheads are the ones protected from this taking place. If you ever looked at a locust's face is very similar to a horse's for some reason. So these beings are, when you look at them, and they look like horses that are prepared unto battle and that kind of stuff. When you look at the face of a locust, it has a very horse-like face. And these locusts are not just going to have the face of a horse, but they're also going to have the face of a man. They're going to be very demonic-looking. And this is the passage that makes some prophecy preachers think that it's going to be a helicopter and that kind of stuff, because it talks about having the face like a man and the hair like a lady and tails and sounding like many horses rushing to battle. So they make the hair the blades and of the propeller, the rotors, and you know, the tail and all that stuff, and that's not true. These guys basically are a bunch of locusts. They have the shape of a locust, but they're like to horses prepared to battle. They have a face like a man's when you look at it, and they have long hair like a woman. They have lion's teeth in their face. They're very demonic looking. And then they have breastplates. Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Sound like something from a sci-fi movie. They have breastplates of iron, so they're protected. So it's going to be hard to kill them because they're plated. Okay, so there's not going to be much defense against these guys. And then the sound of their wings is the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. There's a lot of them, and when they fly, they're very noisy. It's no doubt going to sound and look like something that just came straight out of the pit of hell. And then their tails are like unto scorpions, and the tail is the part that stings. So they have a tail like a scorpion's tail, and that tail is what stings and torments the men for the 5 months. So it's not going to be very pretty. Now look at verse 11. Yeah, you don't want to worry about Star Wars. You want to worry about the bottomless pit wars. Verse 11, and they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. A lot of people, I don't know why, they make the king of these guys Satan. Okay, and Satan's not the king over these guys. Satan's the king over the children of pride, Job says. But these guys, their king, as they come up out of the bottomless pit, is an angel whose name is called Abaddon in the Hebrew, and in the Greek it is Apollyon. And basically what that name means is destroyer. The angel that's in charge of these locusts that come up out of the bottomless pit is an angel called the Destroyer. Okay, that's his Hebrew and Greek name, is Destroyer. That takes you right back, I don't know if you ever thought about it, but that takes you right back once again to where? Back there to Egypt. Look back at Exodus chapter 12, right before the children of Israel coming. Isn't it interesting that these woes and these seals and all that stuff that are taking place on the earth, isn't it interesting that they're taking place in the same order that you see in Egypt? Have you noticed that? We've been looking at these things and going back and looking at Egypt when Israel came out, and have you noticed that there's the same progression? Look at Exodus chapter 12, just before the children of Israel come out. and you see that angel. Look at verse 23. Exodus 12:23. For the Lord will pass through to smite the Egyptians, and when he seeth the blood upon the lintel and on the two side posts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not suffer who? The destroyer to come in under your houses to smite you. Isn't that interesting? It was an angel named Destroyer that went through the land of Egypt and smote all the firstborn. And the children of Israel, by applying the blood, that angel, that destroying angel, would pass over them. And just like back there in Revelations, those guys are having those locusts, but those locusts don't affect who? Those that have the seal of God on their forehead. Those that have the blood applied, they're passed over by the destroyer once again. Isn't that interesting? There's a tie there between Israel coming out of Exodus. Look at 2 Samuel. Get 2 Samuel 24. You see this angel used throughout the Bible at different points. Look at verse 15. So the Lord sent a pestilence upon Israel from the morning even to the time appointed, and there died of the people from Dan even to Beersheba 70,000 men. And when the angel stretched out his hand upon Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord repented him of the evil and said to the angel that destroyed the people, "It is enough. Stay now thine hand." And the angel of the Lord was by the threshing place of Araunah the Jebusite. So here you have an angel that's God's angel, and he's a destroyer. He's running through the nation of Israel, destroying them, and he's using pestilence to do it. And when he gets to Jerusalem, God says that's enough. Look at 2 Chronicles 32, verse 21. And the Lord sent an angel which cut off all the mighty men of valor and the leaders and captains in the camp of the king of Assyria. So he returned with shame of face to his own land. And when he was come into the house of his God, they that came forth of his own bowels slew him there with a sword. God sends an angel, a destroying angel, to wipe out the Assyrian army. And we've looked at that angel before. Remember, that angel was the one that slew 185,000 men in one night. Slew all the mighty men of the army of Assyria in one night. 185,000. That was one angel, a destroying angel. So here, back in Revelations chapter 9, you see these locusts have that angel over them, which is called the destroyer. And just like back there in the land of Egypt, that destroying angel went out and slew all the firstborn. God sent his destroying angel out. He killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, and he passed over those that had the blood applied. So here you see the same type of thing take place in Revelation chapter 9. You see that destroying angel go out with the locusts, and the sealed of God are protected. They're the only ones that don't get hit by these locusts. Hey, David. Okay. So it's not going to be a pretty thing. 5 months, men are going to seek death, and they're not going to find it. 5 months of torment like a scorpion. Man, dodge there, David. And loaves. There we go. So 5 months this torment's going to go on, this first woe, or this fifth angel that sounds. And they're going to be stung, and generally they're going to feel like just junk. They're going to have headaches and nausea and vomiting and diarrhea and all that stuff for 5-month-long period. They're going to be so sensitive that they're not even going to want to wear clothes. And yet they're going to have to protect themselves. And the angel that's in charge of them is the same angel that you see go out in the Exodus and kill all the firstborn of the land of Egypt, the destroying angel, the one who's called the destroyer. And that's the first woe that's come to pass. Now, you can see this guy in the Old Testament. Look at Joel, interestingly enough, Joel chapter 2, just like Acts is talking about, Joel chapter 2. Find the book of Joel. Joel chapter 2. If you're studying with Daniel, you got Daniel, and then the next book is Hosea, and the next book is Joel. Joel chapter 2, and take a look at these horsemen. They're not nice guys. and they don't quit. Joel chapter 2, look down at, let's start in verse 4. Well, let's start in verse 1. Joel 2:1. Blow ye the trumpet in Zion, and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord cometh, for it is nigh at hand. A day of darkness and of gloominess, a day of clouds and of thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains, a great people and a strong. There hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. Now watch the description of these guys. A fire devoureth before them, and behind them a flame burneth. The land is as the Garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness, yea, and nothing shall escape them. The appearance of them is as the appearance of horses, and as horsemen so shall they run. Like the noise of chariots, on the tops of mountains shall they leap. Like the noise of a flame of fire that devoureth the stubble, as a strong people set in battle array. Before their face the people shall be much pained. All faces shall gather blackness. They shall run like mighty men, they shall climb the wall like men of war, and they shall march every one on his ways, and they shall not break their ranks. Neither shall one thrust another, they shall walk every one in his path, and when they fall upon the sword, they shall not be wounded. They shall run to and fro in the city, they shall run upon the wall, they shall climb up upon the houses, they shall enter in at the windows like a thief. The earth shall quake before them, the heavens shall tremble, the sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withhold their shining. And the Lord shall utter his voice before his army, for his camp is very great, for he is strong that executeth his word, for the day of the Lord is great and very terrible, and who can abide it? You see what's going on in that time frame? Here you have horses. They're like horses, but they sound like many chariots leaping upon the mountains. They don't break ranks. They just keep coming and coming and coming. The earth quakes before them. It's very terrible. You're talking about the same thing going on over there in Revelations. Look back at Revelations chapter 19. I'm sorry, chapter 9. Revelations chapter 9. You have these scorpions going through that are like horses with men's faces. They sound like many chariots when they go through. And the first woe takes place, but there's two more to come. Now look at verse 13. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar which is before God, saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, Loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. Excuse me. And the four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year for to slay the third part of men. So now death has been loosed. And you have four angels loosed. And they're prepared. They're going to last for a year, a month, a day, and an hour. And they're going to slay another third part of men. So you've had a quarter of the earth wiped out, and the third part of the earth wiped out, and now another third part of the earth wiped out here with this sixth angel that sounds. Now watch who comes along to do this. Verse 16. And the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000, and I heard the number of them. Now, you listen to the prophecy preachers, and they talk about drying up the river Euphrates so that the army from China can come through. And the army from China boasted a 2 million man army back in the 60s. So, you can imagine what their army is like now. But that's what people perceive this to be, drying up the Euphrates. But notice something. Who is it that's loosed for to slay the third part of men? It's those angels, the four angels, and these 2 million horsemen. But these are not normal horsemen. Okay, these aren't guys on horseback with swords and bow and arrows, like what you see fighting when you see the other men fighting. Look at the next verse. Look at verse 17. We just read about these guys. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them, having breastplates of fire, and of jacinth and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions, and out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. By these three was the third part of men killed, by the fire, and by the smoke, and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. For their power is in their mouth and in their tails, for their tails were like unto serpents, and had heads, and with them they do hurt. Okay? Before you had the locust with the scorpion tails that stung men for 5 months and they couldn't die, now you have an army of fire with horsemen that are locked up until this day, and those four angels loose, when they're loosed, this 2 million man army comes out, and this 200 horsemen army are fire. Oh, sorry to hear that, David. We're almost done. They're like fire. It's that passage that we talked about. These guys are going to march straight forward. It's going to be like the Garden of Eden in front of them, and it's going to be like a wilderness behind them. They're going to destroy everything in their path. They're not going to break ranks. They're just going to march straight on through. Being inside a building is not going to be a problem. They're going to be able to climb right up the wall and into that building like a thief in the night. So they're going to go through, and nobody's going to be able to stop them. And you bounced my wife. Kathy got stuck, huh? You see this army go through, and that army as it goes through, it's just like a burning fire that devours, and nothing is going to get in its way. Nothing is going to stop it. We read about the horse is going to stab it. And they're not going to fall down. They're not going to break ranks. They're not going to quit. They're not going to be able to stop them. It's just going to be a fire that covers the earth. Okay? Yeah, I'm next. It's not going to be pretty. And on top of all that, as they pass through and they destroy and they leave a wilderness behind them, they have the serpent's head on the tail where they're able to bite people, and they're going to suffer that poison as well as they did the locusts. And a third of men are going to be burned up again. A third of the human race is going to be destroyed again. Now, the sad part of all this is the deceitfulness of sin and the hardening that these guys are going to have because they did not receive the love of the truth. Look at their response. After all of that torment, here's their response. Verse 20. And the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils, and idols of gold, and silver, and brass, and stone, and of wood, which neither can see, nor hear, nor walk. See how the idolatry is an issue there? We talked about the bitter water that causes a curse and all that. Verse 21, neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts. Okay. Yeah, sorry you came in so late living for Christ. We're about done here. We're here from 6 to 7 Pacific Standard Time. We're a little bit over today. So not only does this army wipe through and wipe these guys out, this army of fire, okay, but verse 21 says that you have a lot of murdering going on, a lot of fornication, and a lot of stealing. Okay, so it's not going to be a pretty time on the earth. Not only are the plagues coming down, but man is killing and taking care of each other too. But the sad part about all that is after all of this judgment pours down, and remember that they know, look back at Revelation chapter 6, they know in Revelation 6, when that earthquake takes place, that it is the last day. It's the day of his wrath. Look at Revelation 6. The earthquake takes place. Look at verse 15. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. for the great day of his wrath has come, and who shall be able to stand? You see that? So they know what time they're in. They know that they're in the day of wrath. And yet, after suffering for that 5 months and not being able to die, and then this other stuff happened, and a third part of men wiped out again, they still do not repent. They're the Antichrist men. They have that deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish. They have that strong delusion that they will believe the lie. So contrary to everything that's going on, and knowing that it's God's wrath that's being poured out on the earth, and knowing what time they're in, and having suffered through all of that stuff, they still don't repent. That's the deceitfulness of sin. And I hope, like one of the folks said, I can't remember who it was, that they're not going to be here. And I hope that there's nobody in this room that is going to be there during that time. Because you can be saved from the wrath to come today. And the way that you get saved from the wrath to come today is by grace through faith. You trust in what the Lord did in his cross work on the cross. You trust in him. And he'll justify you. He'll put righteousness to your account. And you'll be out of here long gone before any of those things that John saw take place. And I hope there's nobody here that's in that category that's going to be one of those that really are left behind. Because that day could come any day. Today is the day of salvation. Now is the accepted time. Don't wait. Because you never know when the Lord's going to come. And when he comes and takes out the church, all bets are off, buddy. Everything changes. And it's not salvation by grace anymore. But you better get over there in James chapter 2 and start talking about faith plus works. Okay, we better quit. We're way over time. Any questions?